ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द सेवेंथ कैंटो चैप्टर फर्स्ट टेक्स्ट 9। ज्योतिर आदिरिवा भाति संघाता न विविच्यते विदन्त्यात्मानमात्मस्थम् मथित्वा कवयोन्ततः। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The all-pervading personality of Godhead exists within the heart of every living being, and an expert thinker can perceive how He is present there to a large or small extent. Just as one can understand the supply of fire and wood, the water in a pot and or sky within a pot, one can understand whether a living entity is a demon or a demigod by understanding that living entity's devotional performances. A thoughtful man can understand how much a person is favored by the Supreme Lord by seeing his actions. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, the Lord says, Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam shrimad urjitam evava tatta deva avagachatvam mama tejam shasambhavah. Know that all beautiful, glorious and mighty creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. We have the practical experience of seeing that one person is able to do very wonderful things, whereas another cannot do those same things and cannot even do things that require only little common sense. Therefore, how much a devotee has been favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be tested by the activities the devotee has performed. In the Gita, the Lord says in 10:10, Tesham zatata yoktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. This is very practical. A teacher instructs the student if the student is capable of taking more and more instructions. Otherwise, in spite of being instructed by the teacher, the student cannot make strides in his understanding. This has nothing to do with partiality. When Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvagam, this indicates that Krishna is prepared to give bhakti yoga to everyone, but one must be capable of receiving it. That is the secret. Thus, when a person exhibits wonderful devotional activities, a thoughtful man understands that Krishna has been more favorable to his devotee. This is not difficult to understand, but envious persons do not accept that Krishna has bestowed his favor upon a particular devotee in accordance with his advanced position. Such foolish persons become envious and try to minimize an advanced devotee's activities. That is not Vaishnavism. A Vaishnav should appreciate the service rendered to the Lord by other Vaishnavs. Therefore, a Vaishnav is described in Srimad Bhagavatam as Nirmatsara. Vaishnavas are never envious of other Vaishnavs or of anyone else, and therefore they are called Nirmatsaranam Satam. As Bhagavad Gita informs us, one can understand how one is saturated with Sattvagun, Rajogun and Tamogun. In the examples given herewith, fire represents the mode of goodness. One can understand the constitution of a container for wood, petrol or other inflammable substances by the quantity of the fire. Similarly, water represents Rajogun, the mode of passion. A small skin and the vast Atlantic Ocean both contain water. And by seeing the quantity of water in a container, one can understand the size of the container. The sky represents the mode of ignorance. The sky is present in a small earthen pot and also in outer space. Thus, by proper judgment, one can see who is Devta or demigod and who is an Asur, Yaksha or Rakshas, according to the quantities of Sattva, Raja and Tamagun. One cannot judge whether a person is a Devata or Asur or a Rakshas by seeing him. But a sane man can understand this by the activities such a person performs. A general description is given in the Padma Purana. Vishnu bhakta smrito deva asuras tatvi paryayah. A devotee of Lord Vishnu is the demigod, whereas an asura or yaksha is just the opposite. An asura is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Instead of his sense gratification, he is the devotee of the demigods, bhutas, pretas and so on. Thus, one can judge who is a devata, who is a rakshas, and who is an asura by how they conduct their activities. The word Atmanam in this verse means Paramatmanam. The Paramatma or Super Soul is situated in the core of everyone's heart. And this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddesh Arjuna Tishtati. The Ishvara, Supreme Personality of Godhead, being situated in everyone's heart, gives directions to everyone in terms of one's capabilities in taking the instructions. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita are open to everyone, but some people understand them properly, whereas others understand them so improperly that they cannot even believe in the existence of Krishna. Although reading Krishna's book, although the Gita says Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, indicating that Krishna spoke, they cannot understand Krishna. This is due to their misfortune or incapability which is caused by Rajogun or Tamogun, the modes of passion and ignorance. It is because of these modes that they cannot even understand Krishna. Whereas an advanced devotee like Arjuna understands him and glorifies him, saying, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhava. You are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode and Purifier. Krishna is open to everyone, but one needs the capability to understand him. In external features, one can understand who is favored by Krishna and who is not. According to one's attitude, Krishna becomes one's direct advisor or Krishna becomes unknown. This is not Krishna's partiality. It is his response to one's ability to understand him. According to one's receptiveness, whether one is a devata, asur, yaksha or rakshas, Krishna's quality is proportionately exhibited. This proportionate exhibition of Krishna's power is misunderstood by less intelligent men to be Krishna's partiality. But actually, it is no such thing. Krishna is equal to everyone, and according to one's ability to receive the favor of Krishna, one advances. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a practical example in this connection. In the sky, there are so many luminaries. At night, even in darkness, the moon is extremely brilliant and can be directly perceived. The sun is also extremely brilliant, but when covered by the clouds, however, these luminaries are not distinctly visible. Similarly, the more one advances in Sattvagun, the more his brilliance is exhibited by devotional service. But the more one is covered by Rajogun and Tamogun, the less visible his brilliance. For he is covered by these qualities. The visibility of one's qualities does not depend on the partiality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is due to various coverings in different proportions. Thus, one can understand how far he has advanced in terms of Sattvagun and how much he is covered by Rajogun and Tamogun. So I beg the blessings of all the devotees so that I can render some service. I speak for my own purification. All of you all are very advanced in realizations. So I beg the blessings of all the assembled devotees, especially senior devotees. Hare Krishna. The all-pervading personality of Godhead exists within the heart of every living being, and an expert thinker can perceive how he is present there to a large or small extent. Thus, as one can understand the supply of fire and wood, the water in a water pot, or the sky within a pot, one can understand whether a living entity is the demon or a demigod. By understanding that living entity's devotional performances, a thoughtful person can understand how much a person is favored by the Supreme Lord by seeing his actions. Hare Krishna. So, this seventh canto, it begins when Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring from Shukdev Goswami as to how is it that the Supreme Lord can be partial. The Lord sides with the demigods and he kills or cheats the demons. How is that possible? So in reply to that question, whether Lord is partial or impartial, the seventh canto has been spoken. Now it is understood that why is Parikshit Maharaj asking such a question? Because he couldn't believe that how could such a material quality such as partiality or a spiritual disqualification which is partiality can come in the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is all perfect. So everyone understands this, that partiality or making material distinctions is a very condemnable thing. It's a very horrible consciousness. So Parikshit Maharaj is asking, how is it that the Supreme Lord can have such a partial mentality? Is he really partial? So with this, the whole topic of the seventh canto begins, and Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj's section starts. So we can understand that the Lord, actually in this pastimes, in this canto we will study that how the Lord is not partial. And in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that the Lord is not partial, but he only manifests himself according to the how the Lord or how the devotee wants to reciprocate with him. Ye yatha mam prabadyante tam sthataiva bhajamyaham. So that is one of the reasons why it may appear that the Lord is actually partial to the demigods. Why? Because the demigods want such a reciprocation, whereas the demons, they don't want such a reciprocation. So the Lord, accordingly, he deals with them. Another thing is that it is explained here in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada writes that because the Lord is free from a material body, he doesn't have this defect. And also that when we can see that in the past times, when Shishupal was killed by Krishna, or when Aghasur was killed by Krishna, then the soul of Shishupal and Aghasur, they go and merge into the body of Krishna. So even though the demons get killed, but Krishna delivers them. Krishna gives them liberation. So this is actually a manifestation of the quality of being all good. That the Lord is all good. So many times people misunderstand this quality, that how the Lord can be doing like this. So the problem is that many times people think like this because there's a tendency in everyone to project their consciousness onto others. And that was exactly the reason why in this canto we can read that Hiranyakashipu, he pledged that I am going to kill Vishnu. Why? Because he killed my brother, Hiranyaksha, and he sided with the demigods. So he's partial. If he's partial, he has to have a material body, and therefore I can kill him. So he was convinced of this fact that the Lord is partial, which means that he's got a material body, he's a mortal, and therefore I can kill him. And all the tapasya that he underwent was for this purpose. That I want to take a revenge from Vishnu. So when people misunderstand how God acts, or what is the quality of God, then that can lead to dire situations in the lives of people. So we have to understand that this problem of people's projecting their image and consciousness on others is a problem. So, you know, Prabhupada gives this example, and in this connection, a similar story with a little twist, where a husband, you know, he goes to a doctor. And he tells the doctor, "Doctor, you know, there's a problem. That my wife, she's a little hard of hearing. She can't hear properly. And the problem is that she's so proud that she won't come to the doctor. She won't come to you. So can you suggest some medicines so that, you know, I can treat her?" So the doctor says, "Well, we'll have to first diagnose to what extent the problem is. So today when you go home in the night, you from a distance, you call out to her when she's not looking towards you. And call out to her. And if she doesn't respond, you go forward half the distance and again you call out to her. If she still doesn't listen, again you go close and in a normal speaking voice, again speak to her and call out to her. And you just report to me what the situation is, and accordingly, depending upon the extent of her deafness, I will give you medicines." So this person, he goes after the work, he goes at home, and in the evening his wife is cooking in the kitchen. So he looks inside, he peeps inside the kitchen, and his wife has turned her back towards him and she's cooking. So he asks his wife, "So what is being cooked tonight?" So there's no response. So he thought, "Now let me go closer and say the same thing." So he covers half the distance, he goes a little closer to his wife, and he asks the same thing, "So what is being cooked tonight?" No response. So now he goes very close and just standing behind her, he asks, "So what is being cooked tonight?" And then his wife turns back, a little annoyed, saying that, "This is the third time I'm responding that there's nothing special, just rice, dal and sabji." So the fact is that the problem was that he was deaf. And when he was calling out to his wife was responding, but he couldn't hear. And all the while he was under the impression that his wife was deaf. So he goes to the doctor to get medicines. So Prabhupada says, Atmavat manyate jagat, which means that what you think, you project it on others. And the same thing applies even to God. When people discuss God, they think that probably God is like this, Lord is like this. Or for that matter, a disciple may think the spiritual master is like this, he's thinking like this, thinking like that. Depending upon the conditionings of the living entity, they project their consciousness on others. So Hiranyakashipu, he tried to kill the Lord with his sword. And we find there are modern scientists who are trying to kill the Lord with their pen. The pen is mightier than the sword, as it is said. Now it is interesting to note, someone was telling me, that Darwin, who came up with this Darwinian evolution theory, he had a son who died at a very young age. And because of that, he was so frustrated that it is understandable why he came up with this whole atheistic Darwin's evolution theory. Why? Because they all want to kill the Lord because they think that the Lord is partial. He has not given justice to me or my family. So when people get this kind of wrong impression about God, then this is what happens. I still remember once when I was doing a program in one place, and there was a very wonderful, aged, elderly man, very wonderful devotee. He was telling me his life before he became a devotee. Very interesting. He was a very pious background, very pious man, and he had a son who was around 26 years old. And he went to America for his higher studies. And while he was driving a bike, he rammed into a truck or something and he met with an accident and died. Instant death. Now here he got so frustrated that he built a brick wall in front of his altar. He covered the altar. He said, if Lord can do that to my son, who was so pious, then I don't need to worship the Lord. In fact, he became so angry, he built a brick wall. He actually did that. He built a brick wall and sealed the altar. I don't want to do anything with God. And then I said, how did it change? Then he said, I met ISKCON devotees. And then they explained the principles. And then slowly, slowly, I just demolished. And I again started worshipping Radha and Krishna. So this is what can happen if one actually has misunderstandings about God. So the Lord is not partial. How can the Lord be partial? Even his devotees are not partial. Isn't it? Like, you know, the story of how Narada, he was passing by the Mandakini River and he saw Nalakweri Manigri taking a bath naked along with the Apsaras. And he disrespected Narada. So what happened? Narada cursed him out of anger. And generally people, when they discuss this pastime, they feel, oh, Narada, he's a direct devotee, he got angry. How could he get angry? But actually, by the laws of nature, a person who likes to remain naked is bound to get the form of a tree. So when Narada curses Nalakweri Manigri, he just got the reactions for his own karma, actually. Because that was what he was destined to become anyway. So when he was cursed by Narada, he ensured that even though he gets cursed, he becomes a tree, but he gets the mercy, he gets direct darshan of the Supreme Personality of God, Shri Krishna, in Vrindavan. So how can if a devotee of the Lord can be impartial when it comes to dealing with the people of this world, how can the Lord be partial? And in fact, this understanding of the Lord being impartial has been given to us so that we all actually, all the sadhakas, may aspire to come to that level, to be just like the Father, perfect. Perfection means to come to the level of seeing everyone equally on the level of soul. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmani gavi hastini shuni chayvashva pakecha pandita samadarshana. And a person who is humbled through Vedic knowledge, through the knowledge of spiritual life, he actually learns to see everyone in a spiritual platform. So this is actually perfection when on a spiritual level, when one learns to see how everyone is equal in the eyes of God. As in Christianity also it is said that one should become perfect like one's father in heaven. So this is a very important principle. So Here in the purport, in the first paragraph, Srila Prabhupada writes, Yadyad Vibhuti Mat Sattvam Srimad Urjitam Eva. So here Prabhupada is explaining that when one sees any material quality which is exceptional in a person, any opulence, then that is, one should understand it as Krishna's grace, as the empowerment of Krishna, as the opulence of Krishna, and Krishna has graced him. We see that in every religion that this kind of understanding has been given, and how people also understand that when a person is empowered, he's been blessed by the Lord. Like in the Bible, Old Testament, there is a story of King Solomon. This Solomon, it was a very, very wonderful king who ascended the throne of his father, David. So this Solomon, God appeared to him and asked him for a benediction. And the Solomon, he prays something similar to what the pure devotees pray, as in our scriptures, Prahlad Maharaj. He says that, please give me the wisdom to judge for right and wrong, and let me always be treading on the path of religious principles. So Lord became so pleased with him and said that you have not asked for a good health for yourself, for your family, you have not asked for a wonderful kingdom, you have not asked for any of these. I am so pleased with you, and I proclaim today that there has never been a saint like you in the past, and there will never be a saint like you in the future. And because you have not asked for these benedictions, I still benedict you that you may have all these things that you have not asked for, and also you will have the wisdom for judging for right and wrong. And one such case is that of Solomon. He was so empowered to judge and see what is right and wrong. He was such an empowered administrator that there was once a lady, two ladies in fact, who came running to the king for judgment. And one lady called out to the king and said, my dear king, this lady, she says that this small child belongs to her. But that is not true. This child belongs to me. So what had happened was that each lady was claiming that one child to be theirs, hers. So one lady was saying that this child, when this mother was, when that lady was sleeping, she turned around and she slept on her child, and her child died. And now she is claiming my child to be hers. And the other lady also started saying, no, it is not my child who died. In fact, her child is dead because she, while sleeping, slept on her child and her child got killed. Now, this was a very precarious condition. How to judge in such a situation? And all women were like crying, and Solomon was in a very difficult predicament. So everyone was just waiting for seeing how Solomon would judge. Solomon said, so much of confusion. I proclaim that this child be cut into half and give half to one mother and half to another. As soon as he said that, one of the ladies said, that's right. Other lady, she wept and fell at the feet of the king and said, my dear king, I don't want the child. But please, you give the child to that lady. I don't want the child. Why kill the baby? And she started weeping and shedding tears. And Solomon looked at her and said, this lady has true affection for the child. The child belongs to her. Therefore, the child will go to her. When the people, when they heard such a fine judgment of Solomon, they immediately, without a doubt, got that realization that Solomon was truly blessed by the Lord. And they became fearful and refrained from crime, because knowing that they cannot escape judgment from Solomon. So we can see so many such stories in so many religions, that when a person is empowered, like Moses for that matter in the Old Testament, Moses, he was so powerful. God appeared to him and revealed to him that you must lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And Moses said, me? How can I lead the people out of Egypt? That's not possible for me. And Lord spoke to him and he said, you can see those people who are dumb, and you can see the people who are eloquent speakers. Who has made them like that? So Moses says, well, it is you, my Lord. So don't you have faith that I will empower you to lead the people? So Moses, along with his younger brother, they led Israelites out of Egypt. 400 years of persecution, slavery. And he would manifest the Lord's mercy in the form of doing so many miracles. And he led nearly 6 lakh people and with their wives and children out of Egypt into crossing the Red Sea. You can see that. And what miracles. I mean, phenomenal miracles. I mean, they reached the shores of the ocean of the Red Sea, and he raises his stick towards the ocean, and by the grace of the Lord, the whole sea gives way to the Israelites, to the people, the whole nation. And all the people, they cross the Red Sea walking on dry land. And in the meanwhile, the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, changes his mind. He thinks, how have we let the people go? We should attack them. And they come on their horsebacks. And by the time they reach the shore, those Israelites have already crossed over to the other side. And they are so envious, they wanted to somehow get the Israelites back, that they entered into the sea. And Moses again raises his stick towards the ocean, and all the Egyptian soldiers enter into the watery grave. So the people were stunned at seeing the fantastic miracle of seeing the ocean give way. They immediately realized that they had the realization that he was God. I mean, he was the messenger of God. He was carrying the power of God. But is it enough to understand when a person is empowered? No. Because we see subsequently that the people started complaining to Moses, that as they were crossing the desert, they started complaining, we are thirsty and there's nothing to eat. I mean, have you taken us out of Egypt for giving us the promised land? But what kind of God you're representing? He's not giving us food to eat. He's not giving us water. And they failed in their faith. And they doubted Moses and they doubted God. Why? You have to understand this principle, as it is explained in the Shastras. That to the degree one is attached to one's personal comforts, to that degree, even if we can see the miracle and you can see the services of people empowered by the Lord as very great, but still we cannot acknowledge that it is the Lord's mercy. We cannot come to terms with it, and you cannot appreciate what a devotee does or what a messenger of God can do, and cannot appreciate, and he complains always. So here we can see that how mentions, and Prabhupada also says, I mean, in certain places, that how, in fact, it applies to Prabhupada, that when he went to the West and he was preaching and he was bringing a lot of Western disciples and giving sannyas to the Western devotees, and there were many people who in India who were envious of Srila Prabhupada's phenomenal achievements and accomplishments. They spoke of Prabhupada in a derogatory way and said, oh, Prabhupada has not done a good thing by giving sannyas to so many people who are not qualified, etc., etc. Oh, he should not have done this, he should not have done that. And so many criticisms. So much so that when Srila Prabhupada came to Mayapur to construct a temple there, some of his godbrothers had plotted to prevent him from getting the land in Mayapur. Such an extent. So why? Because of envy. So therefore, in Prabhupada's purport, he explains that we must first understand that the devotee has been empowered by the Lord by seeing something phenomenal. Actually, everything is the empowerment of God. There's nothing that we can do which is not the mercy of God. Every ability, even to raise one's hand, is ability given by God. That's why it is said that old age and deaths are two best friends of the conditioned soul. Why? Because it gives us the realization more and more that we are helplessly dependent on God. Because as age sets in, when all the abilities are lost over a period of time, we actually come to the realization that I had nothing. Everything belongs to God. So one ages, one mellows, and one comes to this realization if one is in the proper association. So therefore, Prabhupada explains that first is to understand, recognize the Lord's empowerment, not to criticize. And in the third paragraph, he says that one must not be envious of such a person. So envy is a very bad thing. Prabhupada gives an example of Nengte Pencho. how a person, he used to roam around in the village naked, and all the villagers would say, "Nengte pencho, nengte pencho." Nengte means naked pencho. Name was pencho. So he became a graduate, did law, became a judge, sitting on the court, giving judgment. Someone came to the village and said, "You know, that pencho, he has become a judge. Really? That nengte pencho? Not possible. So really, I saw him. He has become a judge and he's giving judgment. No, that's not possible. How can it be? He's nengte pencho. He was nengte pencho in the village. He was roaming around naked in the village. How can he be the judge? Oh, not possible. No, I saw him. I practically saw him. He was sitting on the judge and giving judgments. No, he must not be getting payment for his job. So somehow or another, deriding the accomplishments, Prabhupada would say. So the conditioned soul, to various degrees, depending upon the anarthas, will actually envy a person's accomplishments, deriding his accomplishments. Why? Because of that envy that people have in their hearts towards everyone, including himself. Living entity is envious of himself also. That is the problem. So, therefore, in the third paragraph, Prabhupada explains that one must try to give up envy. It's not very good for spiritual life, one has to give up. So, in the fourth paragraph, Srila Prabhupada mentions that how to get the eyes to see God. How to develop the eyes to see God. What is the qualification? What is the method that we have to follow in order to perceive God? So Srila Prabhupada mentions that one has to engage in devotional service. One has to engage in devotional service. And actually, it is astonishing that even here Prabhupada mentions that he gives example in the shloka that just like one can see how much fire is there in wood and how much is of water is there in the skin and in the ocean and how much of air is there in the pot and in the sky, one can understand to what extent there is what is what. So you need some knowledge about these things. Just like there are engineers who are working on this fuel technology for rockets. So they study the combustion properties of certain fuels, and they accordingly choose a particular fuel for a particular machine. Like for cooking, you can use wood, but that fuel cannot be used in cars or rockets. You can't put a log of wood and ignite it down and expect that the rockets will take off. You need highly combustible rocket engines, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, combustion, and there's energy generated like that. So it needs some knowledge as to find out how much of combustion capacity, potential is there in an element in order to be able to use it properly. Similarly, Prabhupada explains, represents sattva-gun. Fire represents sattva-gun in this case. That by seeing the quantity of sattva-gun in people, you can understand that how advanced he is. Also, he says that water in fire and the skin. Skin has water, the ocean also has water. But by seeing the quantities, you can understand, make some judgments. Similarly, also air in the pot, air in the sky and space, you can understand how it is. So one has to get knowledge. One has to be trained in this knowledge in order to be understanding, in order to come to the understanding of who God is or who a devotee is. One needs training. And Prabhupada explains that to the degree one is having that potential, to the degree one is trained up and seeing how, then only he can be able to see. So there is a wonderful pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was a great scholar, such a great scholar that he went to Mithila to learn Nyaya, and his guru, who was Paksharaj Mishra, I think it's Paksharaj Mishra, he was such an eminent scholar that. And he was such an expert in Nyaya and also so guarded that he didn't want that subject to be given to any other university. So he would not allow his students to take notes when he would teach in class. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was such an intelligent person that he would just listen, whole subject, he listened, memorized it, came to Bengal and established it as a subject in the university. Such a brilliant, brilliant scholar, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, expert in the Vedanta philosophy, expert in all respects. And here he is with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lying in front of him, unconscious after he entered into the temple of Jagannath. And Gopinath Acharya is telling, you know who's he? He's God, he's Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Gopinath says, he's God? Come on, don't be a sentimentalist. Where in the Shastras is it said, where in the Vedanta Sutra is it said that God appears in the age of Kali Yuga? Krishna is Triyugi. It's not possible. How can he be God? Don't be sentimental. And Gopinath Acharya explained, you are such a great scholar, but you have ignored such an important Shastra as Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam explains. And you have seen those symptoms that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited. He's not breathing, he's manifesting all the symptoms of a Mahabhagavat. It's not normal for any human being to manifest such ecstatic symptoms of love of God. You can see that, but you cannot accept it. You are a scholar, you can see it, but you cannot accept it. And the reason is that you have not received the blessings of the Lord. You have not an iota of blessing of the Lord, and that's why the fact that he's God is not revealed to you. Sarvam Bhattacharya said, well, don't be angry with me. I was just, it's a joking talk. And eventually, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was told by Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya that you should learn Vedanta from me, I will give you sannyas in a higher order. And he made Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the original compiler of the Vedas, listen to his commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. And he spoke for 7 days, non-stop Vedanta philosophy, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very humbly listening to him, everything that he had to say. And at the end of the talk, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not manifest any of the, he doesn't give any indication that he was understanding the subject matter, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya is asking him with doubt that, what is it? I mean, are you understanding or not? I mean, if you are understanding, you should at least give some, indication of. And if you are not understanding, then you should at least ask me some questions. You are not doing any. What does that mean? Is it okay? I mean, what, my explanations are okay? So he says, well, the Bhagavatam is like a bright sunshine. I'm sorry, the Vedanta Sutra appears to be like sunshine, but your commentaries are like clouds, rain clouds. They're like, so Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya heard that. After 7 days of giving katha, if when someone gives a lecture, and after the class or someone says, what you spoke was, I couldn't understand, but the purport was so clear, but what you spoke, I got completely confused. Now, at least that day will go completely spoiled. Because certainly everyone, now he is being such a great scholar, and for 7 days he spoke, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells him that his commentaries are like clouds. He was completely devastated. He said, how you can see like that? And what is your explanation for it? And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started speaking, he was completely destroyed, all his misconceptions destroyed, and it dawned on him that such intelligence, such knowledge base cannot be belonging to any human being. This person is no other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he offers obeisances, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blesses him and reveals his six-handed Shadbhuj form and reveals his identity of being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. So what is important is the mercy and the blessings of the Lord in order to understand who the Lord is. Therefore, this is the method of actually getting the mercy. This is the process. Just like, there was a case of a film star. He slapped a reporter. And there was headlines that Bollywood star slaps reporter. And why? Because the news reporter was trying to probe too much into this film star's personal life. So he became so angry, pat, one slap. And that became headlines. How can he do that to a reporter? So we understand that no one likes people to intrude into their personal life. No one likes it. No one likes it. Why? because we want privacy. Our family matters. What do we, people like to read about film star. This film star did like this. Now he's carrying on with that lady, or this lady is carrying on with that man. Why? It's very hot subject matter for people to read about. But many times they don't like such their personal life being discussed in open public. Why? Because they want their privacy. So an ordinary human being can want privacy. Why can't the God? Why can't the Supreme Lord be wanting some privacy? Therefore, Krishna explains, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrita Muruyam Nami Janati. Can you understand me? I can understand everyone. Vedaham Samatitani Vartamanani Charjuna Bhavishyani Chabhutani Mamta Vedana Kashchana. He reserves the right to be known. Why? It's his private life. And his family secrets are known to his devotees because the devotees are his family members. And if someone wants to find out, what is Krishna doing? Is it like that? Get lost, Krishna says. Why should you understand? You've got no right to understand about God or about his devotees. So, in order to understand Krishna, one has to become friendly with the family. I remember once before coming to Krishna consciousness, I knew a family, very wonderful family. I didn't know, my uncle knew. So, he was going to Goa with them. So, I said, where are you going for Goa? I was very young that time. So I said, okay, fine, I also want to come. So they were very friendly with us. They welcomed us and they were so open to let us know everything about their family members and everything. So once you get to know people and they know that you're not envious of them, then naturally the secrets of the family will be revealed to them. And in fact, they will invite you more and more. Please come. Our so-and-so family member is having a birthday. Please come, attend this, take a cake or something like that. So therefore, to understand God is also similar, because he's a person, he's not an object, as many people think. People's perception of God is as being some light or some object which they can understand through their intelligence, but it's not like that. When you understand that God is a person, what comes next is to get into the goodwill of God, into the good books of God, and then try to, render some service, and that's the way how it is. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that depending upon the modes, to the ability that one is able to understand Krishna to that degree. Just like sometimes we go for prasad. Many times after going for prasad, we take a plate and we realize we've not got a glass and he's serving juice. Juice, and we look for a glass. Oh, glass is not there. Oh no. So then we are forced to take something. We take a plate and the person serves juice in the plate. And then we are looking at the server. Only that much juice? I wanted more. And the server, what will he say? Well, you don't have a glass for it. What can I do? I'm serving in your plate. So if you have a wonderful receptacle, if you have a glass, you can take. So similarly, it is explained here that depending upon the ability to take, God is ready to give you. But if you don't have a glass, you don't have the right attitude, then how can you get it? So there's no point in blaming God for it, because God wants to give, but we are not ready to take. But we don't have the reciprocal. Why? Because the heart is like a pot which is full of holes. Holes of envy, lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion. So we don't have the receptacle. So therefore that is very important. So how to fill up those gaps? So therefore in this canto, Prahlad Maharaj is preaching to his own father. He's saying, Naisha matistavadurukramangrim sprishatyanarthabhagamo yadartaha Mahiyasham padarajobhishekam nishkinchananam navrinita yavat. That you have to take dust. That is the remedy. Dust. Padarajobhishekam. You have to take dust from the lotus feet of the devotees. Mahiyasham padarajobhishekam. That is the. So you put the dust on your head and in the heart something takes place. What's that? How's that? Science. Put dust here. Heart is purified of all the anarthas. And if you don't take the dust from the head, then the dust will go into our eyes. And with dust in your eyes, everyone knows it's so uncomfortable. You can't take darshan. There's some dust in your eye. You'll go, oh God, what's it? Let me remove it out. So therefore you'll be forced. Dust will go into the eye. What does that mean? It means rajogun. Trinavarta raised the dust. And Vrindavan Vrasis could not see Krishna. Where is it? That's also raj. Rajogun means raj also. It means dust also. That enters into the eye. Therefore, we take dust. Now, dust, people like dust actually. People worship dust. Now, you have to worship some. You have to take dust. If you don't worship this dust, then people go to the moon to get dust. And Prabhupada would say, what do they have in the museum? They have 600 kilograms of moon dust. Oh, really? And what are they doing with it? They're worshipping it in the museum. So you have to worship it. And they paid $1 billion worth of moon dust. Wow. And they were worshipping it. So dust is immoral. You have to worship dust. So the best dust is not moon dust, but pure devotee dust on the head. People like to put dust. I mean, they put this talcum powder, you know. Now, I have some experience in this because I did a market research for a company, mineral manufacturing company, and, you know, they were into minerals. And what are minerals, actually? It's like, you know, what is talcum powder? Talcum powder comes from a stone called as talc. Now, talc is a stone which is very soft. You touch it, it's very soft. And you grind it up into small powder, and that becomes talcum powder. It's nothing but dust, nothing but calcium carbonate. And that, we put some scent in it, it becomes powder, and then... you know, when I used to be young, I used to put a lot in my... My uncles and all used to tease me, "Ah, you're looking like a monkey, you know, powdered face." So, you know, I'll do that. I mean, if you don't take that dust, you have to take this dust. So might as well, you know, take the path, the dust from the lotus feet of the devotee, because that is what will give us the power to actually perceive who's God. And what does it mean to take dust? Now, dust means many people, many times devotees run behind the dust of other devotees and take dust. But actually, dust means to accept the instruction of that devotee. To accept that you are the master, I am your servant. What is your instruction? Please, I will follow. So therefore, when we take the dust, be humble, service attitude, have the humble service attitude, then that reveals us the inner secrets of the pastimes of the Lord and His devotees. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.